together to on the path to meet, to recognize one another, and to share maps, and to realize that the maps are part of it, but behind the maps, here we are. Here we are.
All right, guys, welcome back to The Road to Here. This episode guest is my good buddy, fellow guitar nerd, and all-around fantastic human, Mr. Jonathan Diaz. Diaz, introduce yourself. Say hello to the people. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Hey, everybody. So I'm Diaz. I am a guitar player, like Will said. I play in my church. I was raised in the Pentecostal church most of my life. And yeah, it does stuff to you. So that's what we're here to talk about.
No. No.
Listen, I've left and come back many a times.
Really? So we'll get into that. This guy named Heretical Dan on here. I don't know if you're familiar with Dan. He does content stuff, mostly on TikTok. He's got an Instagram too. And he came up in the Charismatic Church, which apparently is an offshoot of the Pentecostals.
I'm more of the Charismatic side. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know the difference. So.
Well, most Pentecostals are considered Charismatic, but not always. You get the Pentecostals who are more towards what, like the Baptist Pentecostal. They don't really do the speaking in tongues and running around with tambourines thing.
Okay. Yeah, I went to one Pentecostal church service when I was a kid with a buddy. And yeah, I mean, you grew up in the South, man. You know how it is. You can spend the night, sure, but you're going to have to come to church. Like that was the rules.
That was it.
You better plan it on a Friday and just ride the bus home, because if you spend the night on Saturday, you were going to church the next day.
That's it.
And that was quite the experience for a young man who had like little to no church background. Just like
the funny story is growing up in the church and being, especially like whenever I was in middle school, I left the church in middle school and didn't participate in the church in most of high school. Some of it, but not a lot of it. There was a big thing, you know, invite your friends.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And every time you invited a friend, something crazy happened. And you were like, it's not usually like this.
Yeah.
And you probably got told that. It's not usually like this.
Yeah, we don't usually throw the snakes, man. That's like every 10th.
I've never been around snakes, I can say that.
I watched a documentary on YouTube, and this guy was like a second generation snake handling preacher, right?
Were they in Tennessee?
That's yes.
Popular.
Well, that's where it started, bro. It was in the mountains of East Tennessee. Your neck
of the woods. Good old Appalachians.
Yeah, but... Bro, he got bit by whatever the hell snake he was holding, and his dad died from a snake bite, but he took up the charge, and he got bit in the thing, and he's trying to, like, you know, their whole thing is they can't, like, they have to wait it out, you know what I mean? They can't go seek medical attention, dude, but he sat there for like 5 minutes and was like having seizures and stuff, and he was like, hospital. So
that offshoot is very much in my mind the same as the people who live in Tornado Alley then get confused that their house got blown off by a tornado. I don't know how that snake bit me. Like, well, you pissed it off.
Right. Yeah. It messed him up, dude. Like he was, it like paralyzed one side of his face, and he had like some developmental delays afterwards. He wasn't right. Like it wasn't the same.
And then they doubled down on it.
Yeah. Your faith wasn't strong enough.
Yeah. Listen, that's one of the things in the church that was absolutely horrible and horrifying. I lived in the era of the church where they were literally trying to scare the hell out of you. Like there was this big production that went around and it might still be going called Heaven's Gates, Hell's Flames.
Dude, I saw, I don't know anything about this, but I did see a billboard for this relatively recently.
So it's this big production that goes around and it literally is people dying in different scenarios and going to heaven or hell. Like
this is like a play? It's like theater?
Yeah, it's like theatrical. Like a family gets in a car accident and as like a kid, like I'm in like fourth, fifth grade watching this, and I was like, we're gonna have to get in a car and go home. Like we're all going to hell. Like it's
dude.
That's the age I grew up in. And luckily, right now, like the church I attend, and there's a lot of churches that are becoming more, I guess, progressive away from that.
Right.
Where they're actually trying to, like, the big thing about our church is, you know, we set a table and everyone's invited.
Right.
That's kind of our thing. And
that was kind of the point.
You would think the problem with Christianity is Christians. And that's the biggest threat to Christianity is Christians and people who just turn the Bible and use it however they want. I just saw this post today from, well, she's not going to ever see this, my own mother, that literally quoted scripture that said that the right was right and the left was wrong, or like the left is death, and like is like, oh, that's liberals. And it's like, are you serious? You really think Ecclesiastes was written
right
about the Democrats? Like,
dude.
Come on.
Man, all right, so that was one, you know, I went to I've said it a couple times on the show, but I went to Liberty University for a while.
My mom graduated from Liberty University.
Okay. You know, and I took, I was really into theology courses. I took a couple apologetics classes and all that. And that is honestly, that experience is kind of what turned me away from church. One of the things, because it was, when you really break down that book, man, it's impossible to argue against someone who's using apologetics as like classically trained apologetics, because their entire argument is based on the Bible. And like at this point, personally in my life, like I regard that book as myth, as, you know, and I'm not saying there's not important wisdom in the Bible, you know, and like all the scriptures, but I think, you know, I had to step away from, you know, it's man-made.
So that's one of the biggest things is I've grown. I mean, so I left the church, I would say.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
I strongly left the church twice. One time was right after high school. There was a time throughout middle school and like whenever my mom didn't make me go,
right.
But I did, but it wasn't a sense of, I didn't go to the church cause I didn't believe. It was literally me just like being a kid who's like, I was raised. We went every Wednesday night. We went every Sunday morning, Sunday night. We had family prayer every night that lasted 30 minutes and you fall asleep and you get a spanking if you fall asleep during prayer. Like, I was raised in a very, so my stepdad who raised me in the church was ex-military.
Hmm.
So, you know, those things started blurring together. I would go with him to church every Sunday morning because he played drums on the worship team. Right. And so I was there in the morning and I sat in the front row and I behaved and I was quiet. And, you know, and it was, I was raised in that church. And then my biological father and I had a falling out. And then whenever I was 18, he committed suicide. And so there was I went through a really big identity crisis, and the church at that time wasn't as loving, I would say. Mm. It was more, the church was more about how holy can you get. It was right. It was like almost like a competition of the holiest people in there, and you look down on other people. It was such a hierarchy. And whenever you're like an 18-year-old kid and you've lost your father, right. And you're asking these questions of like literally asking like my pastor, like, do you think my dad went to heaven? Like, right. and then literally saying, well, you know, you don't know, you know, where his heart was before. And it's like it's a whole whirlwind. So there was a big time there whenever I left the church and I went through a horrible personal journey with drugs and alcohol. And then I moved to Tennessee when I was I was 20. So there's probably a good two or three years where I was just kind of crazy. And then I moved up here and I went through Celebrate Recovery, mm-hmm. which is a pretty much a Christian 12 step.
Yeah.
And I got back in the church and, you know, I met my now ex-wife there. And I spent a lot of time, and then it was one of those things where I was a guitar player. I started learning how to play worship guitar, and it was
just add reverb,
add delay and reverb. That's
what it was. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's 100%. Listen, so I'm the church I'm playing in now is a higher production than I used to play in. And like literally one of the sound guys is an amazing guitar player who always has an amazing sound. He's like, add more reverb. Like that's literally he's all I'm like, that's all I hear is reverb. He's like, good.
Like, reverb is the sound of God.
That's it. But so, anyway, so I
so what wait, hang on. What brought you back to the church after that experience? Like how did you break like that and then just come back?
It was really, you know, in my faith, I believe in callings. When I was in my mother's womb, Jesse Duplantis, who's a pretty popular Southern, what is he called? I can't even think of the word. Like evangelist. He's okay. A Southern evangelist. He did some television and stuff, but he actually prophesied over me in my mom's womb and said that I would be in the ministry. And of course, looking back in the church where everyone prophesied over everyone and it was very vague things, that was kind of one of those things that was always implanted in my head. So when I came up here, I felt a calling to come up here, and it was God or whatever. And so I just kind of leaned into it. You know, I was able to get moved up here, and I really felt the church kind of, you know, embraced me. Took me how I was and really helped me become a better version of myself. I found my family and everything. So that was just kind of one of those things where I just, you know, I had spent so much time away from God in my mind that there was this kind of absence and this like missing thing in me. Mm-hmm. And I felt that that was God that was supposed to be there that I had pretty much ignored and turned my back on.
Okay. So, continue. Like you're back in the church. You're playing in the band.
I'm back in the church, playing in the worship team. And then, you know, it came this thing where, you know, I would get to play at other churches. And then we were at a church, and it was before my wife and I got together. She had left that church, and I had left that church as well. And then we started talking, and we decided we were going to find a church together. And one of the things was with me being a guitar player, you know, the Christian church is really good at, if we can use you, we will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no joke. If you have a talent or something and the church feels that they can use it, they will. And that's not always a bad thing. I mean, it can be. It really depends on where their heart is for that. Mm-hmm. That's like the church I'm at now. I got pulled in because he's now the worship pastor, is the son of the worship pastor I used to play for. Mm. And he hit me up. He's like, hey man, we could use some help playing guitar if you want to come visit. It wasn't a real big push, but it was kind of one of those things where it's an easy in for me. Mm-hmm. It's really tough going to visit churches whenever you don't have a talent, or not saying you don't have a talent, but you don't have something that is noticeable that the church can use.
Right.
Because if there's something that you can use, the church will pay a little bit more attention to you.
Why do you think that is? Just, I mean, what does that say about the church to you?
Well, once again, it's where the heart is. Where I was used for my talent was really also a way to bring me in to a community that I enjoy. I absolutely love the people that are around me. And it's one of those things where if I didn't want to play guitar, I'd still be welcome there, all the same.
Right.
So that was one of the things. And I got to a point too, where if I was at a church, I was playing every week and it became almost like a job. Like I would go play and then like the pastor would be preaching and I'd just be kind of walking around doing nothing until it was time for us to come play music again.
Let me ask you this. Let me, going back to the trauma, because that is kind of the whole premise of this miniseries, right? I wanted to explore the relationship of trauma and religion. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any religious trauma, and I've had a lot of deconstruction stories on the show, obviously, because that is a prominent thing. And what do you feel like your faith and the church, especially the church that took you in, that became your home? And I understand that feeling for sure. After everything with the death of your father and the addiction and everything else, how did this church help you, or did it, with navigating that trauma?
So one of the good things about the church I'm at now is they're very much like our pastor will be on the stage and he'll talk about mental health and be like, well, awesome. Literally he'd be like, go talk to a therapist. And he'll talk about, he'll even say like, you know, I was talking to my therapist.
That's cool.
And that's great to have a pastor that's able to, number one, he always say like, listen, I'm not perfect, like not even close. Yeah. And you come from a, you know, especially where I grew up in a world where the pastor was held up on this pedestal.
Right.
Literally, and then there's people who are only looking to tear that person down. So then the pastor was on the defensive all the time and would operate out of a defensive mindset. And it was so tough. I mean, you know, you get these churches, you know, our church has a board, but like, it's not like you'd get churches with board members that would be feuding over things and using the church as a weapon.
Right. People are going to people, even in church.
And that's the thing is the church I'm at now, you know, I haven't seen it. And it hasn't been apparent to me at all, which has been a wonderful thing. Because there's a lot of churches where you're there for 3 weeks, you already hear the drama. Right. Like, you already hear what's like, oh, Becky Sue over here is doing this and this. And it's like, oh my heavens.
Becky Sue's banging the preacher's brother.
Right. Like, there's so much drama in the church. Because people thrive off of that. And whenever you're living in a world where everyone has to put on this mask of, oh, I'm such a holy person. It's nice. Like, that's the thing. I'm in a church where it is not like that at all.
Right. Do you think that puts you in a position to navigate the trauma? Because I know, and like, if you haven't gotten to that point, just say that, like, I get it.
Yeah,
like,
no,
it took me over like almost two decades to actually navigate the traumatic things that had happened to me.
It was literally maybe 3 years ago.
Right.
Well, it was right before my divorce. So about 3.5 years ago, whenever I finally started dealing with my father's death. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of that dealt with, it really was this sense of, for me, it wasn't even dealing with it in the sense of, okay, I lost my father. It was more of a concern of a spiritual sense of like, you know, did I do something that wasn't right? Like in my relationship with my dad, because I was acting out of this mindset where I was in church of like, my dad's an alcoholic. I'm not going to deal with that. And so there's like part of that stuff where I was in a church where everyone was trying to be this holy person,
right,
and not just be real about stuff.
So you thought it was like a punishment? Like, is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, like there was almost a level of that too. Like I felt, so whenever I had a series of losses. When I was 16, I lost my stepfather who pretty much raised me. He raised me in the church. You know, my mom and him had a divorce, but he still, after they divorced, you know, kind of looked after me.
Right.
And then I lost him at 16. I lost my dad at 18. And I felt this total loss where I actually just turned my back on God. Wow. I was pretty much like,
understandable.
You're taking everything from me. I don't want anything to do with you. Mm. And then I finally got to a point, and that's also like the church I'm at is really based on, we're trying to, you know, the mission is we're trying to build a church that doesn't cause trauma in our kids. Hmm. Because that's a big thing. That's a thing that we talk about a lot, is just the trauma and hurt that we all in my generation, or just the generation right around me, has felt from the church.
And dude, that's one thing that I saw and kind of inspired me to do this, right? Because I've been on this like spiritual kick thing. Like I don't consider myself a Christian. But I consider myself an amateur student of religion and philosophy, right? And I enjoy it. And it's so obvious, like the trauma, man. And when I got on I'm big on TikTok. It's like the only not big, like isn't popular, big as in like that's the only one that I fucking use because that's the only one I like.
Yeah.
And of course it's gonna get canceled, but you know, when I got on the deconstruction side of that, I was like, holy shit, like the pain, man, is like palpable. You know what I mean? When it becomes, and these guys are hurting clearly, and they have 200,000 people that are following them, and you know, that comment, and that's a lot. That is a lot of damage done for, you know, in the name of love. And
that's the tough thing, is because whenever I grew up in the church, and honestly, going through until the time I came back this last time, which I've only been back in the church. I mean, I've been back in the church less than a year.
Okay.
I was out for maybe the past 5 years.
Okay. See, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that you were out of the church at that time. Cause I mean, hell, we've hung out and done stuff in that 5 years. I had no idea.
Yeah. Like, so I had turned my back on the church. I hadn't turned my back on God. And that was just a reaction from the pain that I felt and the hurt I felt from the church. And a lot of that was stemmed from the 2020 election. Leading up to like the 2016 election and 2020 election and all this stuff. Like, there was so much politics that just came into the church.
That's weird. That's weird, dude. I see that a lot here too.
And that was the thing where I was just like, I was disgusted by the people who I was standing next to. And they were spewing forth hate in the name of God and disguising it as love, because they would always, it's like the funny, I would always do this. I'd be like, oh, you can say whatever you want as long as you say in love afterwards. Like, hey, by the way, I can't stand you. I think you suck simply based on the fact that you weren't born here in love. And it's like, it's kind of like saying, you know, with all due respect, man, like, it doesn't give you the right to just say whatever you want.
That's growing up in the South, buddy. Man, I it might be all right, but that, I just don't like Mexicans. I mean, I hear that so much because I work in blue collar, like into trades, man. Yeah. That is all you hear, dude. Like that, it's weird. It's weird. The people that I see their posts will be, you know, come to church, man. We love you, you know, and then the very next, like when no one's looking,
go back to where you came from.
Yes, and they're talking about how terrible people are. It's crazy, man.
Listen, I'll tell you a story that happened literally last week. And it was one of the just, well, it was probably about, it was 10 days ago or so. And it was one of the most just absolutely disgusting moments that I've had to deal with. We're remodeling a store for the company that I work for. And we had a lot of workers outside who were Hispanic, probably, you know, and this woman comes in and one of the workers was asking for mayonnaise, and he said it with a very thick accent, and it was hard to understand him, but I knew what he was saying. And the woman says to me, she said, this is America. And I looked at her, I said, and he is speaking English perfectly fine.
Right.
And then she just gave me an evil look. And then I stepped away and she raised her bag up to block her face. Like, I couldn't hear what she was saying because I couldn't see her lips. Like I was a child. And she said it again to another employee. And I said it again. I said, and he is doing just fine. And she said, you're going to learn to respect your elders. I said, I know how to respect everyone, which is why I'm treating him with respect. And it's like, it's stuff like that. And this is probably the same woman who goes to church on Sunday.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Sits in the front row, brings, you know, baked beans to the potluck.
Right.
But whenever you go out of the church, you don't demonstrate that. If you work in the service industry and you're a waitress or a waiter, you do not want to work the Sunday lunch.
Bro, no.
You don't want to deal with the Christians. You're probably going to get one of those little fake $100 bills as your tip that says to come to their church.
Right.
And so, they're going to treat you horribly and not tip you.
So what's the answer? Like, how does the church change that? Because that is what I thought about. I spent about 2 years in a Southern Baptist church, so not a long time. You know what I mean? But I got enough to kind of get a feel of how shit worked. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And like that, I noticed that a lot. And what's the answer?
I have the answer.
He has the answer. I like this.
I have the answer. If Christians would admit that God does evolve, and while he is constant, he also changes because he can be many things at once if you believe in that. And the fact is, because even in the Bible, it shows an evolution of the covenant with him. That's the whole point of the Old Testament and New Testament, is the covenant was fulfilled and now there's a new covenant, and that things change, where God at the, you know, in the first half of the book was a vengeful God, and then the God in the second half was a God of love. But the thing is if Christians would admit, okay, you know, things have changed, but God is still a God of love and he's constant in that. And, you know, the main thing that we're supposed to do is show love to everyone. It's not our job to condemn people and just show God's love. That's the biggest thing, is you can quote scripture all day, but what do you do in your actions? If Christians would start acting like decent people and show love and, you know, try to just do better as a human and let that be your testimony instead of you're leaving a pamphlet in the bathroom. Like, that's how the church changes. And that's, you know, that's one of the big things, is if we would just realize, okay, first of all, we're not perfect. We're not going to be perfect. And while we're trying to do right, we don't need to pull other people down. We don't have to put out someone else's candle to make ours shine brighter. That doesn't do any good.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You know, think about, everyone who's been near a church has heard this little light of mine. I'm going to let it shine.
Right.
It doesn't say this little light of mine. I'm going to put out Becky's to make sure that people see mine.
Man, and that's what Becky happened today.
Well, yeah, that's just, I feel bad. There's a girl that we used to go to church with, and the worship pastor would always pick on Becky. So it's just been the name. I feel bad. I'm gonna have to pick a new one. But anyways, but that's just what that's the problem. If the church would stop worrying about what everyone else is doing and worry about just doing good for other people, then that's it. Like, there's times I was at work and I just have people who say, you know, you're a good guy. And that makes me feel good, because if they were to ask me, okay, you know, like, what's so different? I could be like, well, you know, I follow this basic rule set in my life. It follows the Bible, and this is what I live by. And then, you know, people could be like, okay. And then they can make their own decision. I don't have to say, yeah, it's because I worship the God that's right. And you know, you're a heathen. that does no good. And the whole point, and my whole thing has always been, is we, like, Jesus was a human, and we have this story of this guy who's doing these amazing things and just trying to show God's love and trying to show, hey, we don't have to follow all these rules. We just need to be basic good people. And it's right there. There's plenty of red words. Read those, focus on that, and just, that's all you need to do. You don't need to worry about if you've gone to, you know, church the right amount of Sundays to be a member and all this. And have you given enough money? Was it your 10%? That's not what's important. What's important is just being a good person.
So let me ask you this. And I have my opinions, but I want your opinion.
Okay.
How do I want to phrase this? Do you think the American church culture, the American Christianity in America, do you think is it more about God, or is it more about the community that is provided within the church?
So it is the American Christian church is, I would say, more geared towards building a community, but also in the sense of iron sharpens iron, you know, and the garbage in, garbage out. What you put around you is going to affect you. You see that in just kids in high school. The people you hang out with have a direct impact on you as a person and your, you know, your moral compass. And that's one thing. But that's also can be the very negative of the church, is you build these communities and then you get cliques, you get, you know, these communities that feel like their way is the only right way. And that's where you end up with offshoots and cults and all this other stuff.
We're a tribal people. We're a tribal creature. That's just what we do in any situation. If you put in a group of people that don't typically know each other, they're going to form alliances, for lack of a better word, like that. And that's just what we do. We fall into place.
Right.
It, I feel okay. For example,
I feel like your question was more, is God the focus or is the person the focus? Are you there to get something just for yourself or are you there to get God?
No, okay. Yeah. I mean, I guess I think community is important. And if you're going off of red letters, like you were talking about, I mean, yeah. You know, Christ said where two or more gather in my name, there I am also. So,
I mean, Jesus literally walked around with 12 friends.
Right. And so I guess where I get confused, where it starts to get gross for me in the church is when it gets huge and there's latte machines and, you know what I mean? When it becomes monetized, and we had our local Six Flags Over Jesus church here, the pastor was voted businessman of the year in the community. And I was like, wow. Huh? And this
was his
church
business
is
the church, or was his business something else?
No, his business was the church, bro.
Oh, okay.
And he doesn't do anything. Like it's this is a monster outfit, and like there's another church in North Nashville where the pastor did 13 years in prison because he slit a Sunday school teacher's throat. In a drug fueled rage. Like he was a kid, he lived in Texas but you know, he was in prison. He turned his life around. He found God and now he's out. Right. But he has a mega church. He lives in a gated community in the richest area of Nashville. Like, and it's hard for me, you know, to buy. You say you humbled yourself and that, yeah, and number one, but maybe there is God involved, because how the hell do you kill somebody in Texas, a Sunday school teacher in Texas, and only go to jail for 13 years? Yeah. What's his name said that back in the day, you know, Texas typically will kill you back.
Robin Williams said that they were, he's like, they'll electrocute anyone. They said they got upset whenever they couldn't electrocute mentally challenged people anymore.
Yeah. How do you, because I know you to be a good person and I know you to be a loving person. And how do you rectify that? How does that make you feel about the church? And how does that motivate you to act?
So that's one of those really tough situations where I don't feel that a pastor should live like that. I don't think that a pastor should live in poverty. I believe that so our pastor is a full-time pastor, and he does quite a bit of work and spends a lot of time. Our church is very big on being very clear about how much money we put out. Like we have so much come in and how much we put right back out into the community, and what we, you know, where we spend our money, we're very clear on. There's such a fine line where you've got to realize that human nature is greedy. That's where I think I was kind of leading with your, is God the focus or is the person the focus? That goes with any church. Especially with your pastor, if your pastor is the person you're following, or if God is the person you're following. And also as a church, we should hold our pastors accountable. No pastor should be above reproach. And if they are, you know, living a lavish lifestyle, I think there's something that needs to be looked into on that, because listen, the whole thing is if I give money to a church, I give it knowing that it's going to help keep the lights on in the church, allow for this, you know, facility that we're using, allow for the pastor to be able to live and focus on, you know, helping the people in the church and doing the things, you know. In our church has coffee, you know, we don't have like latte machines or anything like that. We've got coffee, we've got creamer that's warm, it's in a carafe that's warm, like it's a little bit of something like that. But really the thing is like we have that as something just complimentary, because it could be something that just helps someone out. It could, you know, we could have a single mom that has three kids, that's wrestling kids, doesn't have time to stop to get coffee, but we have coffee right there. She can put her kids in children's church and relax and be able to enjoy that time.
I get it, man. So, not throwing shade. I was just curious.
No. I'm not. But there is, I've seen it, whenever you've got churches that the focus is drawing people in because you need people there to give money to fund things that aren't going back into the community, aren't really kind of moving the feet of God's people forward. You know right. What I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if that's like we have a church that's local to us, and the pastors, like almost all the pastors in this network of churches, are car dealers.
Right. It's, like, it's very similar. The vibes are similar. I will give you that.
And listen, you see these pastors that they learn things. They learn vocal cadence. They learn how to get people to feel certain emotions. And that's one of the problems of the church too, is whenever the church is based on emotion to get you to where they want you.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's classic manipulation. I mean,
that's a thing. Like, if you look pastors, there's a lot of pastors, if they were to do a personality test, would probably be based almost like a sociopath. Like, they're people who want people to flock to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I was just watching before we even started talking, before you even messaged me and was like, you know, hey, you want to do it today? I've been watching a documentary on Synanon, which was.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar. Yeah,
so you're familiar with Synanon. And that's kind of that thing where, you know, these leaders get, and that's where you have to ask that question, is God the focus or is the person in charge the focus?
Hmm.
And once you lose sight of that is whenever I feel like you've got pastors who are worried about making money, who are worried about having a nice car, making sure that the new family with the money gets taken out to dinner, stuff right. like that. And it's like, that's where, you know, we're not going to be able to, it'll never be phased out. Human nature is going to do that.
We can evolve, we can change, but it is what it is for the most part.
It's going to be like that. And honestly, the only thing that you can do is you as a person, if you're a Christian and you're choosing a church, is to really keep your eyes open. Don't let them pull the wool over your eyes, because there's a lot of churches that's what they want to do.
So I want to say one thing, and then I want to ask one more question in this line of questioning, and then we'll do a couple weird questions. All right. Because I get weird. Okay. I don't know. I won't take you down the rabbit hole with me, but shit gets weird. Like, my search history is strange. Like,
dude, we probably have the same TikTok feed. No worries. We're all good.
So number one, in reference to the stuff that you've been through with losing both of your fathers, and I can cut this out, like, whatever, if you want me to, but
no.
I genuinely want to say to you as a friend, like, number one, I'm sorry that happened to you. And number two, fucking good on you for making the best of it, like, and doing what you're doing.
Like that, yeah, it was really tough, but it's one of those things that I'm happy that I'm in a place where I don't let that loss start affect my life anymore.
Right.
Well, that's, you know, I'm able to look back and look at positive things, look at negative things. And actually start focusing on seeing how they have affected me and trying to, you know, change that.
Oh, that is painfully healthy what you're doing right there, buddy. Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah.
I've got a partner and she's amazing. And that's one of the things that, like, me and her are, like, so open and honest with our communication.
That's good.
That it's like, it's painful at times.
Oh yeah.
But it's growing pains where finally, like, you're able to, like I said, 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I started dealing with my dad's death. And it's like, you know, going through and doing therapy,
right,
is a great thing. Like, and focusing on mental health, and that's one of the good things. Some churches nowadays are really pushing that.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good to hear, because I haven't heard a lot of that doing the show. So that's awesome. Because I'm a big proponent. As I have PTSD and was recently diagnosed with ADHD, which explains a whole fucking lot, Diaz.
All right, so I'll be, like, open and honest. I recently did a stint in a mental hospital, a mental rehabilitation hospital. And it was one of the I mean, it was such a great thing because it was a very big pivot in my life. Mm-hmm. And being able to realize that, because I spent, you know, almost 10 years knowing I have bipolar 2 mm-hmm. and not taking any medication and just surviving. Okay. Like I thought I was managing, but I was just surviving.
No, the meds are people. Yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of meds. Like meds have changed my life, dude. Like, and I know people have their own ifs and, you know, or issues, and I get it. I totally do. But for me personally, give me the meds, bro, because I feel way better. Like,
here's the deal. Do I believe that God has the power to fix your mental health issues? Yeah. Do I think God's going to fix your mental health issues? Probably not. God also has allowed for us to have medication. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, yeah, I don't understand. And this is.
I was raised in a church that was like almost against medication because it was one of those. If you had this problem, your faith wasn't strong enough.
Yeah, Dan, the guy I mentioned earlier, Radical Dan, that was a big part of his thing too. People were dying because they weren't getting treatment. And
I'll tell one story that was just like looking back on it. I went to a pre-K that was. It was a Christian academy. I went there for pre-K, and when I was there, I can't remember how old I was. I was probably in kindergarten at the time. I was young, and one of the students who was a teenager actually committed suicide in the building. In the building.
Oh, that's awful, dude.
Like, and it's one of those things where, like, looking back on it, it's just. You're in a church. That should be the place you should be able to go to. And that was one of the things too. The church for the longest time wasn't accepting.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's also based on what I've seen doing this. It's also the place where the most trauma occurs in a lot of situations.
100%.
So how, and this is my last question in this line here. How do you approach the topic of religion and spirituality with your kids? Because you mentioned previously that your church makes it a point to be aware that the situation can be traumatic for children, especially later on if they lose their faith or whatever. How do you approach it with your kids personally?
So I really found that I got drawn to church whenever I wasn't forced to go. Being forced to go wasn't a great thing. So our kids, for the longest time, it was, you know, when I was married and then living in the house and we had our three boys, it was, you know, they all came with us. If any of them said they didn't want to go, we didn't force them, except for the youngest one. It was like, hey, you can't stay home by yourself.
Right.
But like, that's, I don't force my kids to go. My partner, her daughter goes with me. She loves going, but Jude, he's 12. I asked him, hey, you want to go to church with me? You know, and he goes. And he loves going. And I even asked him, like, I asked him last week, I'm like, hey, do you enjoy going to church? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, you like it here? And he's like, yeah. It's like, okay. I'm very much I believe that kids shouldn't be forced to go. There's just a level of, you just really make it habitual. I like church shouldn't be, oh, we wake up Sunday, we have to go Sunday. And, you know, I hated that. So I'm not going to force my kids to go through that.
Right. Well, that's interesting. That's good. I mean, I always wonder because, and I asked that question, I asked it to everybody that I know that has children that comes on, has children. That comes Childs. On the show. Yes. Children's. You know, because honestly, it's kind of a selfish question because I don't know. Like I haven't really approached it with my kids, and I have two that are pretty much grown. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We don't, but that's how it was done with me. Like my upbringing wasn't, you know, we weren't anti-church or anti-God. Like it just, we just didn't go. Like I went with my grandmother.
But I feel like for me, if people were to ask me, you know, I believe that works because my two oldest kids, I've got a 22-year-old and a 17-year-old those two I adopted. So don't do the math when I said I was 35.
Right.
So they go to church now on their own. They go to churches that, you know, their mom doesn't go to. I don't go to.
Right.
They literally they go with their girlfriends to the church that they go to.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean,
and it's one of those things. Like, I'll invite them to my church. Like, hey, I'm playing this week if you want to come. But they're usually like, their response is like, hey, I'm gonna be at my church. I'm like, okay, cool, dude. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
So, that's a big thing. Like, there's a churches for a while said it's a relationship, not a religion. Like, that was the catchphrase.
I remember that. Yeah, that was when I was doing the thing. Not scriptural, in my opinion, if you're basing your beliefs off.
No, I mean, somewhat, but like, there's a little bit of, that's the kind of the way it should be, is it's not, it's more the sense of it shouldn't be out of habit. It should be based out of your want to go.
Right.
Or your desire to go.
I got it. All right, man. Let's get weird, Diaz.
Let's get weird.
I'm weird.
Wearing pants. Let's do this.
All right. Yeah. Me, well.
Yeah.
I'm kind of scared. If I wasn't, hell, everything else has been going wrong. So the pre-production on this show was an absolute fucking train wreck. So things were falling. Cords weren't working. It was a nightmare. Anyway.
Hey, at least you are doing the green screen. Whenever I do podcasts, it's just, a painting of Elvis.
I'm trying to just keep people from having to look at the wife's Highlander. So it is a nice car. Anyway. All right, this one's easy. All right, the first one we're starting out easy. Okay. What is consciousness? Like, why are we able to sit here and ponder God in my garage and you in your living room? Like, what is it? What are we? What is consciousness?
So I was raised to believe, and it's something that I don't think I've given enough thought to, but I was raised to believe, the biggest thing is, and this is that our spirit inhabits this vessel. Mm-hmm. This is just, skin and bones that our spirit inhabits. And that's why we're of a higher consciousness than almost anything else.
Where does that? So, if I may, I prefer the term ghost driving a skeleton wearing a meat suit.
Pretty much. Okay. In the sense of that. Like, so, I feel like heaven isn't a physical place. It is pretty much a celestial kind of consciousness.
So it's a dimensional thing, maybe?
Yeah. Something like that, I believe.
All right.
Because that kind of goes with the sense of, God became man. So that means that if he had to become man, then he wasn't. And if we're supposed to be in his presence, I don't think we would be humans in his presence. But mm-hmm. I do feel like we will have some sort of representation that is similar to this body, because humans were created in God's image. So I'm assuming that the way he looks mm-hmm. is somewhat of human. So.
Okay. All right. So do you think there are any common links between the major religions of the world? I don't know how much you were exposed to other religions, but.
I used to study other religions quite a bit, or I wouldn't study them so mm-hmm. in depth, but I would try to find the connection actually.
Okay.
That's like, Muslims are pretty much just Christians' cousins.
you just angered an entire. I have a good buddy that's Muslim, but yeah, I get it. Like all your Abrahamic faiths are it's the same guy. They're talking about the same guy.
What Allah is just God. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. And so I feel like there's a lot of religions that use different names for the same being. I also am one that believes in polytheism. I believe there are multiple gods, and while they might not be as powerful as the God that I worship, they could be gods in the sense of people just made them gods in their mind. So right. That's you said you've studied, you're into Buddhism.
Yes. If anything. If I'm anything, it would be a Buddhist. I have been actively practicing Zen for 3 or 4 months now. Like, I attend weekly meetings and meditate.
Okay.
Good stuff. So, but the thing about Buddhism is there's no, it's not about deity. Like when right. when they ask the Buddha about God and you know the nature of things, he remains silent. It's more of an intrinsic thing. So
right, but you know, but in the sense of, but Buddha is kind of like the a person you guys look to in a sense, right?
No, Buddha was a man. Buddha was a man.
But I'm saying like in the sense of like, but he, you follow his teachings, right?
Right. He is venerated. Yes. He's venerated as a teacher for sure.
All right. 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 So I'm trying to get to that. Like some, while there may have been teachers that people have kind of projected into almost a deity form, not saying Buddha in that sense, but I believe that some religions are like that. And that's even in the Bible, he says, you'll have no other gods before me. He said there are other gods that have been, you know, that people would put before him.
Hmm.
So in that, I mean, he admitted it in the word of God right there. Hmm. So
dude, what was the question again? Have you ever, the link, is there a link between them?
I believe there's a link to all of them. And because all of them are based around the same idea of being a good person, showing love, you know, was Boondock Saints said, you know, thou shalt not kill. Yeah, thou shalt not kill. You know, it talks about these are, you know, rules that all men can follow. And so I, you know, and honestly, I've gotten to a point where I feel like I would be arrogant to think that my God is the true God. Well, I believe that, but to sit there and look at someone in the face and say, no, you're wrong, I'm right, would be very arrogant in my mind.
Oh, it is, but that doesn't stop people from doing it.
Does not stop people from doing it. But, you know.
There's two things that really, I've been on an Eastern religion kick, right? That's what kind of sent me into the Buddhist learning. There's a Buddhist teaching where it says that, you know, everything is a finger pointing at the moon. And if you think about it, like the religions are the finger all pointing at the same thing. If you really break it down, that really hit me. And the Rig Veda, which is a Hindu scripture, it says the truth is one, the paths are many. And while that's a universalist approach for sure, and will get you laughed right out of a lot of conservative evangelical churches, that to me makes so much sense personally. I don't know where you are, but
yeah, universalist church. Now that's a whole nother topic. That,
right.
those are a little confusing to me because while I believe it's just kind of. I kind of feel like, well, if you're going to have a church, at least let's have it focused. like everyone can have their own church. That's okay.
The narrow, spicy church.
Religions are like private parts. You keep them to yourself. You don't wave them in people's faces unless they ask, okay?
Oh, boy. I'm not going to touch that one.
Once again, and you're not allowed to touch it.
Yeah. All right. Here's a good one. This is gonna be the last one. All right, man.
Okay.
Right, this is about AI. Okay. And I don't know where. Okay. First of all, let's preface this. Where do you stand on AI? How do you feel about it?
I'm like 95% like, okay, this is really cool. It's something that could be a tool that could advance the human race. And then I'm 5% like, we've made movies about this. We need to be very, very careful.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Like, there's that little part of me that's like, this is really cool, but this could be really bad.
All right. So let's say that AI advances to the point where it's coexisting with us one day. It no longer needs us to function. Like it can write its own code, it can morph itself, whatever it needs to do. It becomes a creature that we have created that is sentient on its own and continue. We birthed it and it just takes off, right? It does its own thing. So if that happens, and this is not a Terminator situation, I mean, you can take it there if you want to, but
my mind went more Keanu Reeves. Like, I'm okay, all right.
If that were to happen, does AI develop its own religion? If so, what does that look like?
Ooh, AI develops its own religion. I could see that happening.
What do they deify? You know what I mean? Like, what? Because technically, we're their creators, so this could go the opposite of the Terminator, and we just have like, you know, minions.
So
if it's sentient, then that's essentially slavery, and we've already learned that that's no good. Most of it.
If it can think on its own, it's not going to find, it's going to find us as a lesser being. 100%. Because
why
we have flaws. We have flaws. And while AI, if AI gets to the point where it can become its own thing, it probably won't see itself with its flaws, just like humans have problems seeing itself with flaws. Mm-hmm. It might think that it's more, it's all knowing. I mean, if it has access to the internet, it has access to information on the fly. Like literally all it has to do is you could just look at it and be, it's like walking Google. It has all this information. There's no way that in my mind, it would think that it would be a lesser being than us. And I could see it pretty much making itself a deity and almost being like a, the Redwood Forest where every, where it's all connected. And shares one mind.
Mm.
And
like
therefore,
Avatar. It,
like it would make itself a deity. And I honestly feel like it would be a Matrix situation. Maybe I've watched the Matrix way too much and, you know, Terminator, but you know, that's a possibility. That's the 5% of my brain. And right. Now you've made it 10%.
Yeah. Yeah.
But honestly though, I do think that like if it created its own religion, it would, I think, as humans, we just see it as a cult kind of situation. Like, there's so many of these cults you look at, and you just like, I mean, Scientology. I don't want to piss off any Scientologists, but you write down your beliefs and say it to me with a straight face, like, and.
Man, you know, I try not to shit on anything, but I'm going to shit on Scientology. Okay. It's
literally like
L. Ron Hubbard was just an absolute piece of shit. Con man, like he stole Jack Pearson's girl and all of his money and just bounced, and you know, then Jack blew himself up. Are you familiar with Jack Pearson? He's the American the father of American rocket propulsion, okay? But he was also a fucking weirdo. Like weirdo in the best way, in my opinion. Like he was into all this. Like he was a he practiced the lama. He hung out with Aleister Crowley. Like he was, you know what I'm saying? Like he was in that whole like occult weird. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
But he and Ron Hubbard had a business deal, and Hubbard like took off, took his chick and his money. Like he's just trash, dude. He was I don't know, man. It was just absolute horseshit. Like he was just a con man.
Like, and that's the whole thing is the cult leaders and pastors share the same personality. Mm-hmm. Where
Joel Osteen.
Joel Osteen. Like, listen, I mean, I could talk all day about Joel Osteen. There's just this level of, you see these pastors that have become so full of themselves, and they themselves have become the product. Like I said, they've become the center of it. So,
dude, have you ever seen that video? The guy calls Osteen over, and he's holding the camera out like a selfie. And he thinks, Osteen thinks, and he goes, "You know, you're a piece of shit, right?"
Yeah.
And he just walks off.
Listen, so when at one point they had the Joel Osteen, like the daily devotional boxes.
Yeah.
And they were free. I ordered one. And it had a 3.5 millimeter out, and I ran that into the Osteen distortion from a Westminster.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, it was great. and that's the whole thing is, and every religion has that. Yeah. What was the guy's name? The Mormon guy, who had the big cult, the polygamy. Oh, I can't remember his name.
Which one? The Rock Thoreau in Canada? No.
No. This was in Utah. And then they moved to Texas. But I can't
remember.
No.
They were Branch Davidians. They weren't Mormons.
Yeah. They're Branch Davidian. But yeah, like that's the whole thing. Just with any religion, any offshoot of a religion, look at, you got people who are killing in the name of any religion. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Have there been Buddhist murders? Like,
there were Buddhist warriors.
Samurai were
Buddhist.
He was the guy who lit himself on fire, gasoline.
Yeah, he's on the cover of the Rage Against the Machine album. I can't remember his name. Right. He's a Vietnamese monk.
Yeah. So, but like, I mean, that's the whole thing. And then there's every religion, there's people who just take things too far. And that's with anything in this world. As humans, you get people who get obsessive. That's like how many doomsdays I've survived?
Oh, yeah. My grandmother used to watch the 700 Club, dude. Pat Robertson.
blood moons and all this stuff. Like, I went to a church that started getting into the real mystic stuff. And like, literally the pastor, like, got at the pulpit was just kind of like, hey, no, you guys need to calm down.
That's my jam though. And I couldn't, I love it. Love it.
I love it when pastors are like, okay, no. And that's the type of pastor I have right now. We're going through Genesis right now and really like evaluating stuff. And there's been times where he's like, whatever, you were taught this, but that's totally wrong.
Yeah. There's so much in Genesis that's not what people think it is. If you are a Bible guy, do you like to study the Bible?
I have studied the Bible, yes.
Okay, I recommend that you watch a guy on YouTube. He's on a lot of different social medias, but his name is Dan McClellan.
Okay.
He is actually a Mormon, although he doesn't talk about his faith. He is a Bible scholar. He has a PhD in Jewish studies and the Bible. And he breaks down so much stuff, dude, and drops like cultural context, all this stuff that you don't get like on. And there's so many things that do not mean like what culture has accepted them to mean. And it's just like mind boggling.
That's like in Genesis when they talk about going to hell, the word that they use there, what didn't really mean like hell down below. There was a place outside of Jerusalem that they would light people on fire.
And that
was talking about going to there.
That is why it's hard for me, especially coming from apologetics and stuff, because people will take literally a word in English or a phrase in English that is translated from 1, 2, 3 other different languages.
Right.
And may or may not have words that were the equivalent of what the passage was initially meant.
And we've got scholars of dead languages trying to just figure out what they're really trying to say. And that's the whole thing with the Bible, especially like you've got the King James Version only churches, the like primitive Baptists that do this.
Right.
And you've got all of this going on. And it's like, number one, to know what happened during the building of the King James Bible. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, if you're going to be a Christian, you need to look at the Gnostic books of the Bible to get an actual view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
because all that stuff was cut. All that stuff was cut up.
Look at the book of Mary.
Yeah, Mary Magdalene, the book of Enoch. Yes. I've been going through that on the audiobook, and holy shit, it's a complete.
So, have you seen the movie The Last Temptation of Christ?
No.
You need you of all people need to watch that. It's Martin Scorsese directing. So The Last Temptation of Christ was an actual novel, and the movie starts off with, you know, this is just my interpretation of what could have happened, but it pulls from the Gnostic books. It actually has Jesus not dying on the cross, growing to be an old man, having children with Mary Magdalene. And, you know, there's all the other stories. That's like the story. I forgot if it's China that talks about Jesus actually went and lived in China. His brother died on the cross for him.
In the Bible, as we know it, the canonical Bible, like you have birth and then you have, he's 33.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of learning in between. And some of that's in the Quran. Like they talk about, you know, he was doing miracles from the crib. He was, you know, he's speaking from the cradle and stuff like that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of books, you know, a lot of Gnostic books that talk about those times. But you know, if it didn't align with this perfect, you know, spotless lamb that they had the image of, they didn't put it in there. So the Bible has already been filtered multiple times through man, who has been deemed fallible and you know, capable of so much wrong. And you're going to expect, but then there's also the belief that this was the holy word of God that was given down to man. And you have to believe that it landed the way it did for a reason. But
you don't have to.
Well, there's a level of that you want to believe that, because to say that something got in the Bible or was left out that should have been in there is to say that God's fallible. Kind of goes against, you know, that. And then you've got to.
It's saying that man wrote the damn book
and used it
to control the population for centuries.
There's that too. How many different translations can we have? NIV, Message.
The fact that there are so many different denominations of every major religion should tell you something.
100%.
You know what I mean? 100%. Like, because it's, you know, you get people just change it. They don't like something. They're like, fuck this. I'll do it my way. You know what I mean? This is what it really says. And it's been like that since the beginning of time. It was like that in I mean, Henry VIII started the Episcopalian church so he could get divorced. You know what I mean? He was like, I'm the king. Fuck this. I'm getting divorced. Hey, we're not Catholic anymore. You know what I mean? It was, there's so much of that throughout history. But anyway, we could talk for hours on that, man. But we are heading to the end of our time. But anytime you want to ramble on about this shit, I am your man. You have my phone number.
Oh, yeah.
And we can talk. This is like consumes most of my day. Like just thoughts of this. This is the Roman Empire trend, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
Really.
One thing that you can't get off your mind.
You know, the book, you know, my wife's thinking he's probably out there, you know, thinking about other women, and I'm like, well, the Book of Enoch said, and you know,
the Last Temptation of Christ also has Willem Dafoe as Jesus, and
Willem Dafoe.
So Willem Dafoe is Jesus, and Harvey Keitel is Judas.
Oh yes,
dude. So it's an amazing movie, and watching it though is just really one of those what ifs where you're like, that would be kind of crazy. Mm.
Well, Diaz, thank you so much for being here, man. I know it was kind of short notice, and I really appreciate you helping me out. Take a few minutes or a minute or whatever and, you know, plug your stuff, whatever your stuff is. What can people find you? You know, all that good stuff.
So I have a podcast. It's called The Effects Loop. If you're into music, guitar, really, you can check that out. If you want to see what my church does, you can kind of see what I talk about. You know, we're the Resting Place Church. Find us on all social medias. Our services are on YouTube. The mix isn't always amazing, but, you know, you can kind of see what I'm talking about and where I'm at.
See you out there melting faces for the Lord.
Dude, every once in a while I get to shred and it's a lot of fun.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's always fun, dude. I've been playing guitar anyway, it's fun. I agree. Anyway, man, thanks a lot for being here. And you guys, check out Sharing Maps. We are streaming everywhere. TikTok, Instagram. We don't post anything, but you can follow us. We'll probably post something there someday. Really, I'm pushing people to YouTube. If you don't mind, give us a sub on YouTube. And all right, guys. Take it easy, and we'll see you soon.